If you think about it, then you dream about it. Don't worry about it, gon' talk about it. If you think about it, then you dream about it. Don't worry about it, gon' talk about it. If you think about it, then you dream about it.
Hey, you guys, we are back with another episode of Sorry Not Sorry. Disclaimer, if you're listening and I don't sound like my best self, I'm like totally hungover, but I'm here to give you guys content, so the show must go on. Thank you for everyone who reposted, who shared, who, you know, came into my DMs and shouted me out and gave me feedback. You know, the love is real. I'm glad you guys loved the first episode. I heard from a lot of people who said they were shocked that my first episode was so light, yet very educating. So this is the episode you guys wanted me to do. This is the shit that I do on Facebook, my rants, when I argue with, you know, racist white people. This is the episode that's going to have you guys like, yeah, this is what I wanted. So today's episode is all about policing, police brutality. And I wish I can cue NWA, fuck the police, but... fuck the police, coming straight to the underground, something, because I'm brown. There we go. So today's episode is all about that and my views on it. And I'm going to let you guys know I'm not an expert. I say this all the time. I'm not an expert on any topic that I talk about, but this is just my viewpoint because this is my podcast. And I don't think I'm like the most educated, but because I read a lot and I have parents who made me read a lot, I think I have a good insight and I have some type of platform where I can say what I need to say in a way where it doesn't come out misconstrued. Anyone who's listening, anytime I have an opinion about something, I try to back it up with facts because I'm the type of person where I don't like to base my opinions on just, you know, personal experiences, because I think we live in a society where someone has one bad experience with somebody and all of a sudden, you know, I had one bad experience with an Asian, so now I hate all Asians. Like, no, I wanna attack that type of theory. I like to back up anything that I'm feeling with facts. So let's get into it. So, G's two cents. I think every time we talk about police brutality, the one thing I want to talk about for G's two cents is the idea that black on black crime somehow relates to Black Lives Matter. And today, I want to try to debunk that theory. We've heard it before. It is the most, you know, frequent response to any accusation of police brutality. You know, oh, why don't black people ever talk about black on black crime? And like, instead of, you know, what I'm attempting to do today, instead of rejecting the entire notion as a method of deflection and privilege, I'm going to attempt to formally dismiss the conversation forever. I don't want to argue with anyone about this anymore. I don't want anyone to come on my DMs about this. Because I'm just gonna direct you to this episode because I wanna get rid of this conversation forever. Like, I wanna lay it to rest. I wanna lay it down by the riverside. Down by the riverside. Down by the river. That was my attempt to sing. But I wanna lay this shit down to rest forever. So I wanna lay out the facts about why black on black crime should not ever be in the same conversation as Black Lives Matter and police brutality. So number one. It has nothing to do with what we are talking about. I said, let me say that again for the people in the back. Police brutality has nothing, nada, zero, zip to do with black on black crime. Yes, it is true that the vast majority of black murders are, you know, committed by black men, and we should do something to combat that statistic. But that's another topic for another episode. But when anyone interrupts, you know, the discussion about Black Lives Matter by bringing up black on black crime, it just sounds stupid as fuck. You know, when you see people expressly and specifically speaking on police brutality, why do you need to undermine, you know, the conversation? Like, for me, it's kind of like, you know, bringing up black on black crime in a moment is nothing but, you know, derailment of the original and the critical point that we're trying to make, you know, co-opting a conversation that just makes you look ignorant. And by your logic, when I say your, you know, because it's not just white people who, you know, make this point. There's times I've seen black people even bring this up. But by your logic, because black people are already killing each other, then why should police officers who was quote unquote just doing their job be held accountable? By your logic, the blacks are already, you know, killing themselves. So let's not punish Officer Chad for murdering an innocent person, right? No, that's fucking dumb. That's ignorant. That's stupid. So it's not the same shit. We're not talking about the same thing. So don't bring that shit up in this conversation. Number two, black on black crime is a fucking myth. I said it. You heard it here first. It's a fucking myth. If you've never heard this before, you're hearing it now. It is a fucking myth. It was created by white people to make black people look like dangerous hoodlums and killing machines. This way, you know, it keeps the ghettos filled with low-income black people. It keeps them incarcerated at disproportionate rates. And it perpetrates the ideation that, you know, black people, and specifically black men, are nothing but thugs. And I think one thing we need to focus on, we need to remember that our nation is largely segregated by race. So it stands to reason that crimes committed will likely occur against someone of the same race as the perpetrator. Most of the time, a victim knows they're silent. They know the person that's killing them. They know them. They have some type of personal relationship with them. So you're more likely to be killed by your third cousin Ray Ray than you are by the black guy in a hoodie walking behind you. This has nothing to do with one race being predisposed to violent behavior than another. But nice try, though. Number three. I don't think people realize, but we actually do talk about, you know, this so-called black-on-black crime, because like I said in point two, it's a myth, but I'm going to use the term. We talk about it, like, all the time. There are countless organizations, there are activists and movements dedicated to curbing violence in black communities. The number of Stop the Violence marches belittles the demonstration against police brutality. You know, unity rallies and peace picnics happen every fucking day. Literally. In your neighborhood, there's probably a picnic going on right now that's trying to stop the violence. But we have Scared Straight programs for at-risk youth. We have gang counseling, neighborhood watches. We have intervention specialists. We have youth counselors. And we have too many other fucking people and groups to name that all lead the charge against crime and violence. But of course, white people wouldn't know this unless they actually went into a minority neighborhood to selflessly join the efforts to address the problems. And some black folks don't even fucking like to research. You know how many times I see posts on Facebook where people share a post of an article like it's something new, and the fucking article is 2019. The article is from fucking 2002, and they sharing it like it's something new. Like, people don't like to research. So you think I'm going to trust you to find these programs? But I digress. So if you're listening, these are just the points I want to make about why you should never, in a conversation about police brutality, about policing, about, you know, black men being killed, not even black men, black women, like people of color, minorities, anyone being killed by police, why you should never just bring up black on black crime in that same conversation, because it's not the same. It's not. So hopefully by you tuning in and listening to this episode, I debunked that theory with my points. And if you want to argue about it, hit my DMs at gion.mc or my media company, c.connectionmedia. I think the next point I want to get into for G's two cents, I personally do not like cops. I know that's a bad thing to say, but I can honestly sort of, I'm laughing because I just know I'm gonna get so much comments about this, but I honestly can say that I hate them all. And I know it's bad to put the blame on every cop for a couple of bad apples, but if you're a cop, you're an officer that you don't speak up against the wrongdoings of your colleagues, you're just as wrong. You're in the same boat as them. So anytime I see a police officer, I sort of cringe and my face screws up. And I always say that, if something happens to me, don't call 911. Call my mom. Call my sisters. Call my dad. Like, don't call them. Like, that, my trust, I don't fuck with them. And I just feel like as an institution, you know, police officers are entrusted with the power, you know, to take away life and liberty in order to protect and serve. That's literally what it is. You have to protect and serve. And this system, you know, places an extraordinary level of trust in the people policing our communities. For many of us, and when I say us as in black people, that trust has been violated repeatedly, all the time. So I don't trust them at all. And I have a reason. You know, we saw the NYPD choke Eric Garner to death on video and then say they never choked him. We saw the police in Ferguson, Missouri, you know, say Mike Brown robbed the convenience store, only to learn, you know, 3 years later that there was no fucking robbery. We saw five police officers in Chicago report that Laquan McDonald lunged at them with a knife, only to see a video showing he was shot, you know, 16 times while walking away. We saw police in North Charleston, South Carolina, say Walter Scott threatened an officer with a taser when a video showed him unarmed and running away when he was shot. And we saw police in Sacramento say Stephon Clark, I don't know if I'm saying that name right, they say he had a toolbar when he was just holding his fucking cell phone in his grandmother's backyard. So why the fuck would I trust the largest gang in America to protect me when they have proven to be just as dangerous as a man who wants to rape me? Fuck that. I'm good. I don't fuck with y'all. I don't trust y'all. I'm good. Me good. And if you're listening, you're Caribbean, that was my attempt. I can't say how you say it. Me good. There we go. I think there are ways that, you know, the police can earn our trust. You know, they can start by first acknowledging, taking some sort of accountability in the ways in which they violated the public's trust and committing to repair that damage that they've caused. They definitely need to stop fucking blaming their own violence on the very communities that they're supposed to be serving. We also need state legislators to repeal, you know, police Bill of Rights laws. You know, they need to strengthen deadly force standards, and they need to open records of police misconduct to the public. We need to know what officers are being accused of what. Like, every time someone gets killed by a cop, we hear more about the victim than the actual cop. We don't know his mental history. We don't know his emotional issues. We don't know if he's married. You don't know what the fuck that man is going through. We just know he killed someone. But I'm pretty sure we know that Daquan as was locked up when he was 16 and he's 26, and somehow that's related to why he got killed. You know what I mean? And I think federal and state departments of justice should be systematically investigating and reforming and replacing. And, you know, these police departments with the highest rates of police violence, the police departments that have, you know, crime rates and have a reputation of these kind of actions, they need to be called out, period. It just goes to show that the system that is designed to, you know, ensure that the police are not accountable to the people they are supposed to serve. And if they want the trust and the tax money that we pay them, and they want the respect, because I don't know how many times I encounter police and they're just so, you can't curse them out. And I'm going to get into that with my tea spill about my story when I got locked up. But they just hate the fact that you don't respect them. And if they want that respect, they need to fucking earn it. You guys have proven to not be respectful to the people that you're supposed to serve. And I'm supposed to trust you because your salary says so, because you have on a fucking badge? No. I don't give a damn what your badge says. I don't care how many wards you have in your house. No. My rant is over. So if you're listening, I'm going to say this again. I don't want to argue with anyone about this. I don't want anyone in my DMs, oh, I was listening to your podcast and I think, no, I don't want you to think. I don't care. I'm not going to have this conversation ever again in life. Anytime anyone comes to me, you want to have this conversation, I'm literally going to send the link to this episode, because this is how I feel and I'm not going to say it again. And if you're also listening, again, I am like super hungover and my sister got me aloe vera juice. Shout out to Nicole. Thank you so much, because I need that. I'm literally in the studio that has a lot of AC, and I just feel like I'm in Africa. It's so fucking hot. So, you guys, we're old. I was living my best life last night. Don't go out and drink if you have something to do the next day, because it's not going to go well. So if you're listening, you heard this here first. Don't do it. But let's get into the next segment, Black Eminence. And, you know, I try to shed light on Black people, events, organizations that are doing something to uplift us all. So for today's Black Eminence, I want to talk about E4F, which is an acronym for Equality for Flatbush. And it's a nonprofit organization dedicated to anti-police repression, affordable housing, and anti-gentrification efforts. It was founded by Imani Henry in June of 2013. And if you're listening to this and you don't know what gentrification is, No, I'm not about to explain it to you right now. I'm going to tell you to watch Boys in the Hood and listen to Lawrence Fishburne's character explain it, because he literally hit the nail on the head. That's literally what gentrification is. So educate yourself, because I'm not about to explain it to you. I ain't got time for that. But their two goals are to end NYPD murders, to stop displacement of low to middle income people from Black communities due to gentrification. Specifically with them, the reason why I want to shed light on them is because I think that it's interesting to me how they simply see the, you know, direct relationship between gentrification and the police. You know, when I say we, I'm speaking specifically for people who are born and raised in Brooklyn, because we see the effects of gentrification. But in your whatever state, if you're listening from another state, you see it too. But I don't know, because I'm not there. But I'm just speaking specifically for people in my community. We're familiar with the effects of gentrification. Like, we see the new luxury high-rises and the businesses catering to affluent newcomers, a.k.a. white people. You know, rising rents in older buildings. And, you know, the displacement of longtime residents is there. And we have a situation where white people are moving into our neighborhoods with their conflicting views about public space, which is a direct result in increased police engagement, because they're calling the police on us. You'll be in a neighborhood that you grew up on, you're hanging out, and if you're listening, you grew up with me on Park Place, we know what that's like. We grew up on Franklin Avenue. We see gentrification because of Franklin Avenue. It was never this many bars. Now, we got a Capital One Bank on Eastern Parkway in Franklin? How? And it's literally two fucking barbershops on Franklin Avenue, one that's catering to Black people and one that caters to white people, because white people just can't fathom the idea of having a Black person cut their hair. So, hey, let's just create our own. It's bullshit. And we see it. We're hanging out on a weekend, and they're calling the cops on us because Becky and Hannah on the sixth floor want to sleep on a Saturday night. I'm sorry that you're not going out, but we grew up here. You flew here. You're not about to tell us to be quiet. No, bitch. I'm going to say what I got to say. And bitch, you're going to call the cops on us, which escalates the situation to another level, because you're using the cops as a threat. And it's bullshit. So Equality for Flatbush, E4F, they launched a social media campaign last year, hashtag No Community Occupation, which was to bring awareness to increase police presence in the most gentrified neighborhoods in Brooklyn, the places that are rapidly, you know, experiencing gentrification. And they wanted residents to post photos and videos of NYPD presence in their neighborhoods using the hashtag No Community Occupation. And it's supposed to help them to sort of, you know, generate a map and data that tracks NYPD occupation of our communities. So anyone who wants to learn more about this organization and be involved, you can go on their website, equalityforflatbush.org. They accept donations if meetings and outreach is not really your thing. So support a Black business. That's going to be another episode I do about Black-owned businesses, because I have a lot of thoughts about that. But definitely support them. Do some research and, you know, uplift them in the community. Even if you're not from Flatbush, I know Brooklyn people, we're all big on, like, I'm from Flatbush, I'm from Crown Heights, I'm from Bed-Stuy. We're all from Brooklyn. We're the biggest borough in New York. We're dope as fuck. So if you're listening, you're from the Bronx, I'm sorry. I don't care how much hip-hop you created. We're not fucking with you. Damn, I really just said that, but I'm not fucking with people from the Bronx. Any guy that talks to me, he's like, I'm from the Bronx. It's like an instant game changer. I'm good. I'm good. I don't got time. But going to our next segment, Asking for a Friend, I want to explain how Asking for a Friend works, because people think I'm just pulling questions out of my ass. No. I've sort of combined questions that people have asked me when I'm ranting on Facebook or social media, when people DM me and say, I want to know your thoughts on this, that, and the third. And this is literally how I form my topics. I base it off of the questions I have, and I kind of compile them together. So someone asked me, you know, does Black Lives Matter really contend that police officers are racist? I say no. We seem to forget the birth of Black Lives Matter. It was created, you know, in the wake of Trayvon Martin's death. And what it actually contends is that American law enforcement institutions are systematically corrupted, being especially, you know, predisposed toward the violence against Black individuals. That's literally it. You know, we're not saying all police officers are racist, but they tend to help, you know, further the ideation of how corrupt the system is and how biased it is towards Black individuals. That's literally it. So I need people to stop saying, you know, Black Lives Matter hates police officers. No, not even that hates police officers, Black Lives Matter think all police officers are racist. No, we don't, but we think they're furthering a theory, you know, a systematic what's the word? They're furthering a systematic, I would say, I guess, stereotype when it comes to the relationship between the system and when it comes to Black people. Someone asked me the next question, are police officers different from the general public? So I had to take a drink of water. In some ways, I would say no, because they just have a badge. But police officers are held to a different ethical code than the rest of the public. So a good example of that is our president, Donald Trump. Yes, this country, we have freedom of speech, but he doesn't have that same right because you are held on a different ethical standard. So he's out here calling, you know, he's called the four congresswomen, tell them to go back to the country. He can't say those type of things. I can say it. I have the right to say it as a general person of this population, yes. But he's held to a different standard. So police officers are held to a different standard. So in a way, you're different from the population just by that definition. And if you're listening again, I'm not an expert. This is just how I feel, and this is my shit. This is like, if you have your own views about shit, get your own podcast and say what the fuck you think. I condone it. But in that sense, that's what makes them different from the general population. Are they different physically? No, you just have a fucking badge. You just passed the test. Like, that's the only thing that makes you different from us. Next question. How does the us-them police worldview affect the activities of a police officer? And when someone asked me this, I had to literally Google, what the hell is us-them? What are you talking about? But it's literally what I'm saying, us-them. There's them, and then there's us. You know, we have that separation. So to answer this question, I think we need to look into, you know, the selection process of becoming a police officer. And we have to include, you know, all the screening tests, everything that they go through. It's not necessarily designed to, you know, evaluate who does the job better like we think it does. I think it's more designed to find people who conform to the job. You know, they have the required middle class values. And the nature of a police job makes officers believe that societal order is essential. Their job is noble, and the laws that they have to enforce are fair and necessary. So they're not being paid to think. They're just following a code. And, you know, those who deviate from the norm, you know, inherently show disrespect to police authority. So when you don't follow, when you break the law, you're basically saying you're disrespecting cops. This is not me saying this. This is literally how they're trained. This is literally how the process when they're being hired, the training that they go through. And it's therefore like street justice or a zero tolerance policy is for them a rational way to deal with those who breaks the law. You know, even the police officers who believe in community policing initiatives view those who do not abide by the law as enemies. In the same way that, and maybe I'm being dramatic, it's the same way that a soldier in the field views his enemies. You get what I'm saying? So because they already believe there's them and there's us, it affects how they interact with us. Some of the cops. I'm going to add that in there because I know someone's listening and they're going to say, well, all cops aren't like that. One time, I met a cop and he was just so nice. He was just so concerned. All right, Hannah. So I'm going to add this. Some cops, majority cops, all right? Let me differentiate for you guys. Because someone is going to try to debunk everything I'm saying right now, eventually. So, for the next segment, Tea Spill, I want to talk about the time I got arrested at 16 years old for literally nothing. And when I say nothing, it literally, I literally was in the bookings for 2 days for nothing. So I'm 16 years old. What year was that? It's 2019. I just turned 26 in April, so minus 16, whatever year that is. I was coming from an audition with my dance team, final episode. Shout out to Trey, Traquan. Shout out to Secret Society. He's been in his community, Astoria Queen. Shout out to you guys. He's been in his community, you know, having a safe place for youth to be themselves because. But he was like our Diane of Dancing Dolls. That's her name, Diane, right? I think. It's Diane, right? Okay. Thank you, Nicole. That's my sister, y'all. And Diane, he was like our Diane of Dancing Dolls, where we could be ourselves around him, but when it's practice, he's strict. And I think it's important to have that type of discipline in our community because it teaches you how to be on time. You late to practice, you're not dancing. So imagine me coming all the way from Brooklyn to Astoria, Queens because I was 1 minute late. I got to go back home because I was late. That has happened. And he just, you know, installed certain values in us. So shout outs to him because he's still doing it. I was 16 dancing with him. I think I started dancing with him before I was 16. But at the time I got arrested, I was 16. But we were coming from an audition for All Stars. And if you live in the tri-state area, I know All Stars. What they say, you audition and you make it. Congratulations, y'all. We literally didn't audition. We went on stage, and because it was so competitive back then, and they let anyone pass an audition, I don't know why they even have an audition because everyone gets in. We went on stage, played music, and played Double Dutch. I kid you not. We was on stage playing Double Dutch. We were jumping rope. People was in the corner cartwheeling. That was our audition, and they was like, congratulations. Why? Because they let everybody in. So he was like, I'm not about to waste my time making up a dance when everybody gets in. So he said, y'all go on stage. He was like, and it was planned. He was like, y'all gonna play Double Dutch. I want y'all to play Double Dutch. I want y'all in the corner playing hopscotch. I want y'all in the back. I want y'all to cartwheel it. Like, it was so stupid, but it was fun. So after the audition, and the audition was in Brownsville. What's that school in Brownsville? Thomas Jefferson. Yeah, my memory is bad. I don't know if I'm hungover, but I don't know what that school was. But it's in Thomas Jefferson. I think that's the school. Correct me if I'm wrong. But whatever that school is, I don't want to say Pennsylvania. I think it's Van Sicklin. Whatever. Whatever that high school is. Probably now, it's probably like 5 high schools in it right now. But whatever that high school is, we auditioned there. After the audition, there was beef between groups. Of course, dance teams, it gets really, like, competitive. And it gets, unfortunately, ghetto. And there were 2 dance teams that wanted to fight. And Trey, being Trey, he didn't want us involved in that. He said, no, we're not taking a train. We're not taking a train at this station. We're going to walk to the next station. So we walked to the next station. And I think we walked from, y'all, I'm literally probably making this up. Because I always said Sutter and Saratoga, but I know what those stations look like. The school is nowhere near there. Because Sutter is right after Eastern Parkway. Not at Eastern Parkway. It's right after Utica. So, no, it wasn't that close to Utica. I would say it's at the Junior Streets, those stops. You know, the station is outside. So we walked to the next one over. And we went to the train station, swiped my MetroCard. And at the time, I was using my mom's, my stepfather's MetroCard. Shout out to Mark. I was using his monthly MetroCard to go. We swiped on the train. And we're on a platform, you know, talking. Next thing you know, I'm on a platform, and I hear the cops. The cops came out of nowhere. They're talking to the dance team. But at 16 years old, in my head, I'm like, okay, Gian, you're not involved with the dance team at this point because you know your mouth. So let's act like you're not with them. So I walked away, and I'm still on the platform like I'm waiting for the train. And out of nowhere, a hand just comes in my face. Like, literally just waved in my face. I felt the wind, and I smelled skin. It was, that's how close it was to my face. And I reacted. I'm like, oh, the fuck? Yeah, I had, like, if you listen to my last episode, and I cursed a lot. I'm trying to limit my cursing this episode, but I cursed a lot as a teenager. It has nothing to do with the way my parents raised me. I just cursed a lot. And I'm like, what the fuck? And I'm looking. It was a cop. And he's like, you don't fucking hear me? I was like, excuse you? And the way I was raised, my parents didn't really do a good job in telling me that. They taught me that if someone put their hands on you, hit them back. They didn't say when by someone. They didn't differentiate who that someone was. They said someone. So literally when I hit someone, anyone who puts their hands on me, I can hit them back. Whether you're an old person, whether you're, if anyone put their hands on me, I can hit them back. Like, that's literally how I felt. And my energy was already up just from the fact that he put his hand in my face. I'm already on guard. Like, excuse you? And he's like, get on the fucking wall. You don't hear me talking to you? I was like, I'll get on the wall, but you gonna talk to me like I'm a human being. And he's like, what? I'm like, you heard me. And literally, that's how I said it. I said, you heard me? Like, fuck is you talking about? That's literally how my energy was. He's like, get on the wall. And he grabbed my arm and threw me against the wall. And when he threw me against the wall, something clicked in me, and I swung. Caught him right in his face. Ah, boom, hit him. And once that happened, it went from 0 to 100 real quick. He hit me back, and we were fighting. And, like, y'all, I was really throwing hands with a cop. Like, now I'm turning up on you. And at the time, my two of my dance members, my friends, Bobby, shouts to Bobby, and LC. And they're gay guys, but it was so funny because we all got locked up together, all three of us. And they were just like, don't put your hands on her. And they started fighting with me too. Y'all, it was so bad. One of the cops ripped his pants. And I think I want to express that one of the cops was white, but the one who put his hand on my face, he was Hispanic. And this may be a two-part podcast about the different people. Like, the race, like, I don't know how to say this. I think I get more disrespect from not only from white cops, but Hispanic cops. I don't know if they just feel like they're different. They put that badge on and you're not, you know, like me. But that's literally how they're moving. But he was a Hispanic cop. That's the cop who mostly was giving me grief. And we're fighting them. He ripped his pants. And they put handcuffs on me. And I just remember telling my best friend, Ashley, like, call my mom. And I, like, had my phone. As I'm handcuffed, I had my phone in my back pocket. So I, like, was leaning in a way where I could, like, try to see the back of my hands. And Ashley took my phone. And she called my mom and put my mom on speaker. And I'm like, Mommy, I'm getting locked up. Because the 3 train came. And they told all the dance members to go on the train. So my best friend had my phone. She had me on speaker. And she was, like, walking slow to get on the train. I'm, like, talking to my mother, like, Mom, they locking me up. It's funny now, but at the moment, I was fucking terrified. And when they arrested me, I just want to say that the treatment I received was horrible. Because when we went downstairs to get into the police car, it was like, if you know Brownsville, the way the 3 train was set up back then. I say back then, like, it was, like, the 1990s, but the way the 3 train was, you know them doors, those wooden doors? If you're from Brownsville, East New York, you know what I'm talking about. Those wooden doors. One of the doors was popped open. Instead of him walking me through that door, he walked me through a door that was closed and slammed me into the door. So literally my face hit the glass. And I'm like, okay. And I'm looking like, what the fuck? Mind you, I'm 16 years old. This is my first time getting arrested. And you know, at the time, I felt like, oh, my God, I can't wait to go to school on Monday and tell niggas I got arrested. Like, I got some stripes. But the process was just so brutal. And we get in the police car, and I'm so grateful I got arrested with Bobby and LC because when I talk about the time I got arrested, it's more of a funny story because we're in a cop car, and even though I'm like, damn, I'm getting arrested, I was kind of cocky. I was feeling like, you know, I'm going to get into this later in the story. I was just feeling like, you know, I'm going to go to the precinct and everything's going to be okay. And we're in the cop car on our way to the precinct, and they took us to that precinct on Franklin. I think it was Franklin. It's after Eastern Parkway, not going towards Fulton. It's the other, like going towards Ebbetsfield. That, if you from Franklin Avenue, Crown Heights, you know that police station. They're like assholes. To this day, they're still assholes. So if you're a police officer listening, you're from that precinct, you're in that section of Brooklyn, you ain't shit. Because they all literally behave the same way. But we went to that precinct. And we're in the cop car. And they knew, my friends knew, Bobby and LC knew I was kind of worried, so they decided to crack jokes. So which let me know, this is not their first time getting arrested. They've done got arrested a bunch of times, so to them it's like another episode. And we're in a cop car, and the cops were making like really derogatory statements to them because they were gay. And one of the cops said something like, yeah, they're going to trade you for a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And one of my friends, Bobby, was like, and I'm going to let them. And he was like, well, bitch, I'm not worth a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. They're going to trade me for a pack of cigarettes. Are you dumb? Like, it was hilarious. And I'm sitting here like, oh, my God. I don't think I understand how bad that conversation could have went, especially with the rate that cops are killing us. He could have said something that set that cop off and then he's dead. But the fact that he was like making it a joke just on to make me feel comfortable because it was my first time being arrested is like shouts to them because I was cocky. I was just like, oh, I'm getting arrested, so I'm going to be home by tonight. Let me tell you when I got humbled, when we got to the precinct. It was three cells. They put all of us in separate cells. And Bobby was in the cell with this guy. And the guy was like, don't put me in this fucking cell with this faggot. And he was like, oh, this faggot will fuck you up, though. Like, and then it was just so funny. Then we're in the cells, and they were like, they called me Spunky. They was like, Spunky, you okay? I said, I'm fine. At this moment, I didn't cry yet. I'll tell you guys later on in the story when I cried. I was good. My mom came to the precinct, and my mom is so fucking funny because she came to the precinct with my report cards. She somehow reached out to my high school teachers and got letters of recommendation from, because I was a scholar. So she got letters from my fucking teachers on my behalf and went to the precinct with letters in my report cards and all my awards. She, like, my mom to this day has a folder of all my sister's accomplishments, a big ass beating up folder. I don't know how long she had that folder. That folder probably has a bunch of germs on it, but she has this folder for so long and it has like all our accomplishments. And she came to the precinct with that folder. Like, she shouldn't be in here. This is my daughter. Are you crazy? And my mom has, like, whatever connections she has with the Senate and Brooklyn. And she's like, she knows how to research whoever is in charge of a community board. And whatever name she said, she was like, because I'm going to email so-and-so. I'm going to just say his name is Byron. I'm going to email Byron. I don't know. Byron sounds like a Senate name. I'm going to email Byron because he's not going to stand for this. You have a scholar in jail. What did she do? She mouthed off to you. She shouldn't be handcuffed. Like, and I hear her going off and I'm in the cell. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to be home. My mom's turning up. I'm going to go home. So we're in the cell. We got to the point where we all felt like we were going home. We just started practicing our dance because remember, we just came from a dance audition. So we was practicing our halves, staying in the mix and everything. Boom, 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 ah, that's really how he was talking in the cell. They was like, Spunky, this your part. Dancing in the cell. 10 minutes go by. I don't hear my mom's voice anymore. I'm like, okay, what's happening? The cop comes to me, he opens the cell. I'm thinking I'm going home, y'all. This man walked me to a computer to take my fingerprints. I was like, huh? I said, why you need my fingerprints? He's like, oh, yeah. He said, you're being processed. I'm like, being processed? He said, yeah, girl, this is the big time. Literally what he said, like, he was so proud of himself. I'm like, big time. I'm big time. What's happening? What's going on? Fingerprints. And then I took a picture, and me still being cocky, I smiled at my picture. To me, I'm like, oh, he's just taking my fingerprints so I can go home later. Because at this point, I think we probably was in the precinct. If anyone who ever been locked up before, I think that's the most annoying process is just waiting in the fucking precinct because you're in there literally for 6 fucking hours before they decide to take you to the bookings. And we were in the precinct for hours, hungry. So I'm taking my picture. I smiled, me being cocky. And he was like, oh, you know, the judge is going to see that. Me still being cocky, good, talking shit. The moment I cried, when we got into the car, we went to the bookings. And Bobby and LC had to go to the man's side. I had to go to the female side. So I had to separate from them. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm alone. I'm going to jail. Like, this is it. Y'all, when I got into that cell and I saw the number of females in that fucking cell, and it was females in there who got arrested for drugs. So I was in there with drug addicts. It was females in there who got arrested for prostitution. So I was in there with bitches in miniskirts. Like, this sounds so stereotypical, but these are the women I was in jail with. And I promise you, I will say this. there was, I was the only black woman there. It was a bunch of Hispanics and some white women in a cell with me. And when I say white women, not the white women we see at work, I'm saying like trailer trash. And I'm not saying that to be offensive, but like that level of whiteness, their version of ghetto. And I'm just in a cell and I started crying. I think the moment I cried was when the woman asked me, one of the ladies asked me how old I was. I said I was 16. And they were like, oh my God, she's a baby. What are you doing in here? And I broke down and cried. I was like, I don't know. I didn't do anything. And I just started crying. And I'm just like, I'm not built for this. As tough as I am, I'm not built for jail. It's not for me. Like, I think if I had to do some time, I'm going to be somebody's bitch. And I'm going to be proud of it because I ain't got time to be in fucking jail fighting people. Nah, I'm going to find whoever runs my block. And I'm going to go up to her. What you need? You need some commissary? We be about to be best friends. I ain't got time for this shit. But I'm in this cell. I just broke down crying. And the women felt so bad for me. And in the bookends, for anyone who has never been locked up, in the bookends, you literally wait for your name to be called. And there's a sign on the fucking wall. This is how fucked up the system is. First of all, there's a window with a gate. So you can see when it's sunlight and when the sun is down. But they have a clock. And they purposely change the time on a clock. So the clock is either 3 hours behind or 3 hours ahead. So you don't even know what time of day it is. It's literally like being in solitary confinement. You don't even know what time it is. And they have a sign on the wall that says the minimum wait to see a judge is 24 hours. Y'all, I read that sign and I saw 24. I was literally me, 24 hours? That's a day. I'm like, what time is it? I gotta be here for 24. What? Literally, I'm in the cell and people were there like, yeah, I've been here for 3 days. Yeah, I've been here for a while. What? I got school on Monday. What is happening right now? Like, y'all, I was freaking the fuck out. And they were just like, it's fine. A judge is going to see you because I guess it's not based on how long you're in there where you see a judge. It's based on how fast a lawyer picks up your file. So they go through your file to choose if they want your case tonight. So they were just telling me, like, you know, your case is not that serious. When I told them the situation, they was like, yeah, someone's going to easily come and get you out. I was in the bookends. I got arrested. That was a Saturday. I didn't get out till that Monday morning because I didn't go to school that Monday, I remember. I didn't get out till Monday morning, so I was in jail over the weekend. And you don't see a judge on a Sunday. You don't see a judge on a Saturday. They're home. They off on the weekends. So I was like, oh, fuck. That's another thing. Don't try not to get locked up over the weekend because you're not going to see anyone until that following weekday, that Monday. And I was freaking the fuck out. Like, I'm thinking about it right now. I was fucking losing it in that fucking cell because I'm like, I'm not going to see a judge. But by the time they called my name, everybody who I was in a cell with end up leaving. Everyone saw a judge. So I had like a new round of females getting locked up. So I was like the veteran in the cell. So at this point, you know, I'm being dramatic, but, you know, I had my cigarette, my toothpick. Like, what you in here for? Like, it was literally like that. Like, I'm the veteran. I'm the senior. Because I've been in there longer than anybody else. So when I finally did see a judge, my mom and my dad came to the courts because I turned around when I had my handcuffs and I saw my mom and I broke down again crying because I just felt so ashamed. And there's my mom again with that fucking folder. And the judge looked at me. And this is the fucked up shit about it. She gave me an option because my mom somehow spoke to the judge and gave him my report card. So she thought I was a good student. So she goes, you know, plead guilty. They charged me with disorderly conduct and trespassing. They tried to say I have the turnstile. That's why they arrested me. And in my head, I'm like, I mean, I have a Metro card that proves that I didn't hop the turnstile. But the reason why I didn't fight it is because she told me, the judge was like, you know, if you try to fight it, you're convicted. You could probably do, you know, maybe a week. Or maybe a few days in jail. What? No. What's the other option? 1 day of community service. I'll take that. I took it. No questions asked. Give me that. When in reality, I probably could afford it and had no record. I mean, it's not a serious record, but if I get locked up today, they're gonna pull it up. That's another story because I actually did, but that's another episode, another topic. But they'll actually pull it up. I'm thinking it's sealed and it's like nothing serious, but the cops are bringing up like, oh, you locked up when you were 16. Disorderly conduct. So it just goes to show how fucked up this system is. Because now my encounters with people is based on my record. It's like, oh, disorderly conduct. When it's kind of like, no. Disclaimer, let me tell you what happened. Like, I have to give people the whole story on why I was locked up. Like, I know I have a mouth, but damn. No, it wasn't no disorderly conduct. He put his hand in my face. I hit him back. So what? But yeah, that was the time. I'm not proud of that story. Because I think who I am now, I don't think I would have behaved in that manner. I think that I'm more mature now than I was when I was 16. I was very, as much as I was a good student, I was very mouthy. So I take responsibility and accountability for saying I put myself in that situation. And I'm trying not to get myself in another situation. So just try to avoid cost by all costs. So we're going to our final segment for today, Black Fact. Every episode, I try to educate or inform people about real history when it comes to Black history, because you know the system isn't doing a good job of educating us about things that matter. And I think we should, for today, examine the history of police and policing and where it came from, so we can understand how rooted it is into the culture of this country. So if America was, if policing was a sweater, slavery and racism are, you know, the threads in that sweater. They relate to each other. It's a direct relationship. So I'm going to attempt to educate you guys on the history of police and policing and where it came from. In the 1700s, the first systematic form of, you would say, policing in what would be the U.S., United States, came about in South Carolina. Policing's origins were, you know, rooted in the slave economy and this radically racialized social order that whiteness was invented in. You know, whiteness is the ultimate boundary. Whites, no matter how poor they were or low, they can't be held in slavery. That was a law. But Blacks, you know, we could be enslaved by anyone, whether they're white, free Blacks, people of mixed race, anyone, we could be slaves. That was the law. And the distinction and the economic order that created it, it was maintained by a legally sanctioned system of intimidation, of surveillance, and of brute force. And the purpose was to control us. And these type of people were called slave patrols or paddy rollers. And they were literally just a group of 3 to 6 white men who rode around on a horse, and they were armed with guns and ropes and whips. And they rode around at night among the plantations. And I really wish I had like background music to tell this story. Like, I need like a misty wind. Like, guys, I'm telling this story so we can be dramatic about it. Like, they rode around on a plantation. And they rode around the plantation in the settlements looking for runaway slaves. And they were looking, not only just runaway slaves, they were looking for any unsanctioned gatherings, you know, any type of weapons, any type of contraband. And they generally any sign of potential revolt, anything that looked like the slaves were going to rebel, that's what they looked for. So they were looking for slaves that ran away and looking at slaves that looked like they could possibly revolt. And members of the slave patrols would forcefully enter anyone's home, regardless of their race or their ethnicity, just based on suspicions that they were sheltering people who escaped, any slaves that escaped. So after the Civil War, when, you know, slave patrols dissolved, our ancestors, you know, they were hype because, you know, they were free. But were they really? No, they weren't, because here comes Black codes. And black holes were basically strict laws that detailed when, where, and how free slaves could work and for how much compensation. So you ain't free. You just, you know, we gave you a leg up. That's basically what that was. We hype because we not on the plantation, but really we just still on the plantation, but now we getting paid for it. So you're not working for free now. Now we giving you minimum wage. That's literally what that was. And the codes appeared, you know, throughout the South. It was a legal way, you know, to pit black citizens into indentured servitude, you know, to take voting rights away, to control where they lived and how they traveled, and to seize children for labor purposes. Again, minimum wage. So then, and I think the year was 1868, correct me if I'm wrong, but we had, you know, the ratification of the 14th Amendment, and, you know, it made the black codes illegal. And it gave, you know, former slaves some type of, you know, equal protection laws, you know, through the Constitution. It gave former slaves a protection to work. But did it really? No, because here comes Jim Crow laws, which basically mandated, you know, separate public spaces for black and whites, like schools, restaurants, water fountains, you know, those signs that say white only. That's literally what Jim Crow was. And anybody who was black that broke those laws or violated social norms, you know, they endured police brutality. So when you see those pictures, you know, in the history books with the water hosing and the dogs, just because they drunk from a different water fountain. So can we, the point of this is to examine how gradually it escalated. It went from I'm controlling if you can be free or not as a slave, and I'm making sure you don't have any thoughts of rebelling, to now I'm telling you how much you need to get paid, to now you can't drink from this fountain. If you do, I'm going to beat your ass for it. So this is literally how America, it works. Literally, it relates to how we're being treated now by cops. And this is happening. Meanwhile, we have the night riding vigilantes, the Ku Klux Klan, lynching black people, and authorities did nothing. They did nothing to punish them, nor did the justice system hold the police accountable for failing to intervene. Why? Because the Ku Klux Klan were also members of Congress. They were also cops. So we expect them to protect us when they're the ones fucking terrorizing us? No. So with that said, with the black facts for today, the origin of policing in the police, it has its roots in slavery. And the policing culture has not changed as much as it could, as it should. And it just represents a legacy of reinforced inequality in the justice system. And I think a good example of that is when everyone watched When They See Us. And I think that's a whole podcast topic on its own. But just to be brief about it, when I saw people on my Facebook saying they cried when they watch it, and it's not like, I think when it comes to people of color, when we watched it and we cried, we didn't cry because of the sad story. We cried because it was like watching a horror film, because this is our reality. No, this country is not for us. No matter how much our ancestors built this country, the history of policing and how rooted this justice system is not for us. It's not. It never has been. It wasn't designed for us in the beginning. And I don't want to say it never will be, but it just looks like it's not. When we have President Trump, you know, he was like, I think that whole election when he became president, I remember the next morning going to work, how gloomy that day was. Because he just represents the racism in this country. And it's like when people say, oh, you know, police brutality is a thing right now. No. It's always been a thing. It's just now it's recorded. It's on video. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Rodney King's beating by the police was like the first documentation of it. But years prior to that, it's been happening. So this is not something that's brand new. This is something that's been going on. And we take into account all of that, these conversations, like Well, what is black on black crime? And these, like, it, no, we need to understand that this is the system is broken and it needs to be fixed immediately. Because I don't know how many more of us need to have to get killed for us to realize that something has to change. And granted, I know all cops are not bad, but for you to see your colleagues doing something and not speaking up about it, you're just as guilty because that means you condone it. Because you don't have an opinion to say, this is wrong, I want to change it. And that's why I say police are the biggest gang in America, because they literally function like a gang. That loyalty is ridiculous to me. So, I want to thank everyone for tuning in. Make sure you follow me on Instagram, gion.mc, gionne.mc. Follow my media company, Culture Connection Media, C.Connection Media. Let me know your thoughts. How do you feel about this episode? Let's continue this conversation because something has to change. And I'm about to go home and die because it's hot and I'm hungover. So thank you for tuning in. Later.